Good morning, members and our staff. We have a minute to start our meeting. We'll then await others who are joining in now. Thank you very much. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning to our staff, and good morning to those who have joined us from the media houses. We are about to start our meeting. I welcome you all. We have a very long day today, where we'll finish about 7:30. In the National Assembly House, and I note that you are already logged in, ready for that long day. Thank you very much for your coming in early to this meeting. We will be having two items mainly today on the agenda. We will be starting with the presentation from NHLS. That will be followed by another item, which is a private member's bill that was presented to us, and then we have to make a final input thereon. As I welcome you, I thank you very much for your continued hard work, wherever you are at the time. And this afternoon, again, a lot of you will be alert, working hard, asking questions to the Minister of Health, and other colleagues asking ministers to actually respond to their questions. We notice their hard work and your preparations thereon, and it is highly recognized. Because we are here to be public representatives engaging the country, engaging the ministers, the executive oversight, so that we could get answers ourselves, answers that are needed there by the community. And I like the way you sometimes do it, asking questions in vernacular, in their home language, because then other people out there who sent you could even understand better what we are here for and then what are you doing on their behalf. With those, Mr. Machalamba is just dropping the child at school, but I was going to request Umbali to be the one to lead us in terms of who is present and what are the apologies that she has received. Ms. Makubane, the opportunity is yours now.
Morning, Chair and the members. Present in the meeting is Dr. Jomo, Mr. Sokacha, Dr. Harvard, Ms. Tsege, Ms. Gwarube, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tembelwayo, Ms. Chirwa, Ms. Sengwa, Mr. Van Staden, Ms. Sukers. I don't have any apologies at the present moment.
I'm here. I don't know
Honorable Munyai is also here.
Okay.
Mbali, please note, I'm here as well.
Yeah, she pronounced you as Gwarube. Miss Mbali, she is Gwarube. I did hear you mentioning her name. So that she thought you were mentioning her too.
She has left the meeting. Meeting tools. Unmute. Currently muted. Alt plus A. Button.
We also know...
Alert the host. Muted.
Honorable Kela, Honorable Munyai have also logged in. Miss Makubane, can you just fly to the agenda for today, just to for those who probably are joining us and they may not be aware, like the media house, if you have it next close by to you.
Lindo Wush is going to fly it.
I'm calling for the adoption of the agenda as presented by our staff. Can you adopt it?
Chair.
Supported, Chair.
Supported, Chair.
The first voice was whose voice? I heard the subcon there was Nakala. The first one was it Dr. Hubbard?
No, it's Ms. Kwakube.
Honorable Kwakube calls for the adoption of this agenda, seconded by Honorable Kela. Thank you very much. Ms. Mbali, you can remove it now. And let's get the NHLS leadership, if they are here, to introduce themselves and then start. The chair or the CEO or whoever is leading the delegation, can we then give it to you now? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Dr. Dlomo, and thank you for inviting us to present. We've been waiting quite a long time for this opportunity. Just to say that from the board perspective, I'm here as the chairperson of the board. I haven't spotted Prof. Jeffrey Mpahlele, our vice chair, but also with me is the chairperson of the our National Academic Pathology Committee, Prof. Tanyani Mariba, our chairperson of our Human Resources Committee, Advocates Biwe Mayinga, and chairperson of our Research and Innovation Committee, Prof. Mary Ross. So we have four board members with you today from the executive members of the board. Dr. Chetty will introduce the staff that are here with her as the CEO.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Kami Chetty, the CEO of the NHLS. We have present Mr. Jonas Shai, who is the acting CFO. We have Professor Kuleka Malaswane, who is the executive for academic affairs, research, and policy. We have Mr. Johnny Mofokeng, who is the acting HR executive. We have got Violet Kabashane, who is the senior manager for monitoring and evaluation, and we've got Mr. Tashin Joki, who is the one of our finance managers. Thank you, Chair.
And may I add, I think I saw Dr. Adrian Purin, the acting director of the NICD, National Institute for Communicable Diseases, on the line. So Professor Adrian Purin.
Good morning.
Hello, Professor Book. Did you say Professor Mariba is in your board? We would like to welcome all your board members and him specifically. Just ask for me if he has stopped being a farmer then Limpopo. If he has not stopped, we would like to come and take some lessons from him. Welcome, Professor Mariba, and welcome to all the other board members.
I'm still farming, Chair.
We'll come there and take lessons. Okay, let me take it back to yourselves and indicate, and you indicate who starts, whether the chairperson or the CEO. Thank you.
Okay. May we proceed to the presentation?
Go ahead, sir. Thank you.
Sure. So, I will introduce the early part of the presentation and then hand over to the CEO to present the executive and operational detail. So we'd like to thank you very much for the opportunity to present our annual report to you. Dr. Chetty, we're too far down the presentation.
Yes, so it's the opposite way.
I apologize. So we did submit our annual report on time last year, and we have been waiting for our invitation to present to you and also so that we can publish the report. The structure of the presentation is standard as you'll expect. We can move to the next slide. And then the next slide. And the next slide. So, as you know, our mandate and statutory functions are to provide cost-effective and efficient health laboratory services, which we do for the entire public sector to support health research and to provide training for health sciences education. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. I'm sorry to the chairperson, I'm not in control of the slides because there we are. We have our vision and our mission, and I think that it's very clear that we want to be patient-centered, but also we are really a global center of excellence in laboratory innovation medicine, and Dr. Chetty will talk to the role we play on the continent and globally in the World Health Organization and how we are seen as a global model of the provision of national laboratory services. Our focus is on quality, affordability, sustainability. We have a strong responsibility in the training of pathologists and laboratory workers in support of the universities in their mandate. And we look for innovative and relevant research in what we do. Next slide, please. We have a set of values that's approved by our board of care, unity of purpose, service excellence, transformation, innovation, and integrity. And you'll see from the presentation that we've made that from a transformation perspective, the NHLS has done well. From the sense of integrity, I think you're aware that we have been working very hard to make sure that those guilty of corruption are both found out and held accountable, and we continue to collaborate with the SIU and the Commercial Crimes Unit on cases where we have taken it to them, laying charges and asking for investigation. And next slide, please. In terms of the structure, I think just to identify that we have a board. The board has 22 members on the board. The new NHLS Act that you have passed is not yet operational. It has been signed off by the president, but we are waiting for the regulations. And then we have our executive teams covering the different scope of the work of the NHLS, including driving our laboratory services and their performance. Next slide, please. Just to say, the board members for the duration of this financial year are presented in front of you, and a number of those board members, some of them have completed their board terms, and you'll see that the chairpersons of the different board committees are presented in the thing. There is an error at the bottom right-hand corner. The chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee at present is Mr. Michael Sachs, S-A-C-H-S, not S-A-S-S. Next slide, please. Okay, that's our delegation, which we've introduced. Next slide, please. So you'll recall, of course, that the NHLS has, besides its overarching corporate role in laboratory services, we have a National Institute for Communicable Diseases, for occupational health, for vaccine production, and for diagnostic media products to produce culture media. We won't go into the details of them now, but I think you're all aware of the critical role that the NHLS and the NICD and NIOH have played during the COVID-19 pandemic, but we're reporting here on 2019-20, so I'll move on to the next slide. The NHLS has a national footprint. As you can see, our laboratories are spread across the country and reach into the deepest rural areas of our country. And I think that is very important when you look at us, that we are not a private laboratory service trying to only do the things that are most profitable and will earn the most money. We are there as a national body to serve the national interest, in particular those of the poor. And we bring laboratory services and the value that that offers to our people throughout the country. And we provide services where the private sector would never have an interest to go, because it's just so much more costly to offer those services deep in rural areas. But that's our mandate, and that's what we're proud of. Next slide, please. In terms of the NHLS at a glance, just to say, of course, again, that in the financial year under consideration, we generated an increase of about 1 billion rand. And just to remind you that in 2017, when we introduced a new board and a new executive team, we have shifted from a deficit in that year of 1.8 billion to repeated years of surplus of about 1 billion. Our turnover is about 9.3 billion rand. And I just want to emphasize that that 1 billion surplus is achieved in spite of providing services in rural areas which are more costly, in spite of our prices being consistently below those of the private sector by some margin, and in spite of the fact that our fee increases have been kept down to single digits. We tend to look at about 5% or less per annum. So we're not generating a surplus because we've created Eskom-like tariff increases. We're creating that surplus on the basis of the efficiency and the excellence of our executive team led by Dr. Chetty, together with the good work, I believe, of my board. And that means that now, going back to 2017, we used to have very little cash in the bank. We would often not be in a position where we might not be able to pay our salaries and suppliers at the end of the month unless cash came in, because we used to have 200-300 million rand in the bank. We ended the financial year with 4.1 billion rand in our bank account, which makes us financially liquid. This amount in the bank was there, together with the fact that we'd paid off our creditors, where historically in 2017 we were sitting with almost 800 million rand as an ongoing amount that we owed our creditors. We are paying our creditors current as well, and have generated the surplus. Dr. Kami will share with you much more detailed information at the executive level on this. What is also important, although it's a little bit prior to this annual report year, is that we did reach a settlement agreement with the Gauteng Department of Health on the debt they owed to the NHLS. And we agreed to that they would pay it back over a period of 5 years. And why we have it here is that we want to appreciate that the Gauteng Department has continued to pay its current costs together with the debt settlement agreement over this period as well. Thank you very much. Next slide, please. And then, as you can see, I said to you, our creditor days have got down to 28 days. Back in 2017, we were sitting with the creditor days of over 100 days, and our debtor days are coming down. And certainly, as the chair of the board, my board would really like to appreciate the ongoing commitment of the provinces to paying their bills to the NHLS. Which is absolutely vital. Almost all our income, other than grant income, comes from services provided to provinces. And we really appreciate the fact that they recognize the valuable service we offer to them and our country, and that they continue to pay. The debtor days are look higher than they are, really, because of some long historical debt. We are pleased with the improvements in this regard. And I think what's very important is that we earned an unqualified audit. We'd had a couple of years of qualified audits moving in, and we're pleased to report, again, an unqualified audit for this period. Next slide, please. Then what we haven't presented in this NHLS at a glance, which the CEO will present to you, is the volume of laboratory tests that we perform. I think you'll be taken aback at the number of tests we do in our more than 200 laboratories in the country each year. But I think that you'll all be aware that although it's outside of this financial year report, we did start gearing up from February 2020 as public health and pathology specialists. We saw the pandemic coming, and we started back in February 2020 during the financial year under review to gear the NHLS and prepare ourselves for providing services to the country during what we anticipated would be a COVID pandemic. We started testing as early as the 8th of March. We won't report it in detail here because it goes beyond the period, but we have invested more than 2 billion rand in creating the capability to do laboratory tests. And the fact that our finances were in such a solid state meant that we were able to make that kind of investment without having to go to Treasury with a begging bowl. We were able to fund the investment ourselves to gear our capability and perform, I believe, with excellence throughout this COVID period, both in the NHLS laboratories and in the NICD and NIOH. We had got more laboratories accredited with the South African Standards Body for laboratories. We now have more than 80 of our laboratories accredited with SANAS. We could go faster, but SANAS has a limitation in their capability to actually accredit. But we did exceed the target set during this annual report year, this period. And as you know, part of our mandate is research and an academic role for the NHLS, and we produce 632 peer-reviewed publications, many of which are in the top journals in the world. That brings great credit to the NHLS, but also to our country. Next slide, please. Just waiting for the next slide. That next slide really just talks to our mandate. It seems to be stuck at this slide. Dr. Chetty and the staff in the boardroom, are you able to move slides or is your laptop stuck?
The slide has changed in our file.
Oh, okay, it's stuck on mine. So maybe Dr. Chetty, I was going to end off with the last couple of slides, but maybe you could then continue from there with with our mandate and move on to your CEO presentation of the details of the annual report. Thank you.
So just to also speak to the some of the non-financial performances, we did have a very successful
Dr. Chetty has come back onto my screen now. I could finish the part of my presentation. And I could just say that we had a highly successful Pathology Research and Development Congress. We've worked on a new biosafety level 3 laboratory. We sequenced the first SARS-CoV-2 virus genome in South Africa, and establish an occupational health and safety information system that supports compliance with occupational environmental health safety legislation based at our National Institute for Occupational Health. Next slide, please. Okay, so in terms of governance, I think that the portfolio committee is well aware of the Constitutional Health Act and Laboratory Service Act and PFMA Act mandates that we carry out. And of course, we're waiting for the changes with the NHI Fund Bill and the INAPISA Bill. Next slide, please. Of course, the board is the accounting authority, and we aim to provide strategic direction and leadership, ensuring good corporate governance and ethics in the organization. We actually have five board subcommittees now. We've reduced the number as we go forward. The board during this period functioned fully. It was a fully operative board that fulfilled its mandates and responsibilities. So I think that takes me now to hand over to the CEO to take you through the details of the annual report, starting with a strategic overview. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just also to state that the board also strengthened the NHLS at the executive and management level, the key personnel appointed, the CEO, the CFO, and the Chief Information Officer. The NHLS, as the Chair has highlighted, is that we've continued to provide high quality, affordable services, and that's extremely important because we've shown that we've got proven value for money. And that has also come out during the COVID-19 pandemic. We focus quite a lot on the service delivery improvement, and I will also just add a bit to what the Chair has spoken about with regard to financial sustainability and performance. We've improved our operational efficiencies. We've improved in information technology in our infrastructure. And as the Chair has highlighted, the NICD has played an invaluable role in health surveillance in the country. During the period under review, they were responsible for the identification of the listeriosis outbreak. We're key in being able to identify the COVID-19 pandemic. The National Institute for Occupational Health continues to play a niche role in occupational health and safety. And it's been highlighted during this the COVID-19 pandemic. They've played a vital role in workplace-based health and safety issues. So Chair, just to the performance highlights, some of these have already been mentioned by the Chair. The financial stability, there's no doubt, has improved significantly in the current financial year. The provincial debt, Chair, just to give you an example of how it has been reduced, in 2017, the total amount owing by all of the provinces was about 6.1 billion. That has now been brought down to about 4.7 billion, largely due to the repayments from the Gauteng Department of Health. We've provided details where we're showing that most provinces, with the exception of few, are paying their bills in full. A number of them have wiped out the historic debt altogether, and there's just certain provinces now that still have the historic debt, with the largest being in KZN. And again, just to emphasize what the Chair said, is that Gauteng has been very good in ensuring that they have continued to pay towards the settlement agreement that was reached. Our revenue grew from from 8.5 in the last financial year to 9.3 billion. To give you an idea around how the revenue has improved over the last 5 years, is that in the end of 2017, the end of the financial year 2017, our revenue was 7.1 billion and it's now grown to 9.3 billion. Our surplus was 1 billion, and again, to give you an example of the improvement, at the end of the financial year of 2017, we had a 1.9 billion rand a deficit. The following year, it was a 1.3 billion surplus. The following year was 996 million rand surplus, and this year it's almost 1.1 billion. Our cash flow has improved also substantially. In 2017, our cash in bank at that time was 392 million. We now ended up in this year with our cash being 4.1 billion. Treasury, we did motivate to retain the surplus, and Treasury has kindly granted us that because of the financial performance of the NHLS, and this has helped us tremendously with the COVID-19 pandemic. And we've spoken about our creditors' days and our debtors' days. I won't go through that. In IT, again, I've said that it is one of the challenges, but we are steadily improving on our IT infrastructure. Importantly, Chair, the project with the National Department of Health on the health patient registration system, we're fully integrated with that system, and so the HPRS, if we enter an ID number, it will automatically search on the HPRS, and vice versa, the HPRS will search on our database, and then we're able to then link patients and ID numbers as well. The central data warehouse has been invaluable in providing information, and for COVID-19, we've been able to provide daily information on what's happening throughout the country, and this has really proven to be quite important. We've delivered our test results within the set turnaround time, except for one of the tests, and we are trying to improve that. To give you an idea, we've done 97 million tests in 2019-2020. Which is, if you take 365 days, that's even including weekends, it's about 265,000 tests per day. And that's a huge number of tests that do get performed by the NHS. To also give you an example, part of the reason why we were able to also cope with the COVID-19 testing is that we were used to running big programs. So our viral load testing chair was about 5.7 million tests that we did during the year. As I said, we were then able to act very swiftly when the pandemic, when the first patient was discovered. We started preparing well before that in January, but we started off with two laboratories doing the testing at the start of the pandemic, and we by the end of March we had 8 laboratories testing. That has now increased quite substantially to about 68 laboratories that are doing testing currently. We also took on a number of other tasks during the COVID-19 preparedness in the last quarter. So for example, the evaluation of the COVID-19 PCR test, the antibody test, the antigen test is done by a specialized unit within the NHLS. It is extremely complex, where we have to get standardized panels and assays in order to test those test kits, and that section is really quite busy. We also source reference materials for the validation. We've also been working together with the National Department of Health to look at looking at academic institutions which provided an academic search platform for COVID-19, but we've been assessing their readiness and in order to get them accredited for COVID-19. We also made sure that we utilize existing platforms, so we've been quite fortunate with regards to that. We've gone through the details of the number of journal articles and the SANAS accreditation. With some of the other work that we've been doing with regards to the NICD, there's a lot of support that's given to preclinical vaccine development. We work quite closely with all the vaccinologists that you often hear on the radio, looking at supporting for the future HIV vaccine. So that work has been done. The Center for Zoonotic and Parasitic Diseases has been extremely important in malaria control and elimination, and the work that we also do both in the NICD and the NHLS on TB has been important. The first national TB prevalence survey has involved both the NICD and the NHLS. And again, Chair, the important thing is why we're highlighting this is that there's been a lot of concentration on COVID-19, but we must still remember that TB remains one of the biggest scourges of our time. We've been quite worried in the drop in the number of TB tests, and we're busy looking at how best we work together with the provinces in order to utilizing some of our mobile facilities in order to improve on the TB testing. We're also looking at malaria, because again, it's one of the emerging diseases that we can control. And if we can eradicate malaria and TB and concentrate on it as we've done with COVID, we'll be taking the country forward a long way. The cancer registry continues to play an extremely important part in the surveillance. And Chair, we've got a surveillance, the notifiable medical conditions surveillance system, which again has proved to be extremely valuable in the COVID-19 pandemic, because COVID is a notifiable medical condition. So we were able to strengthen the notifiable medical conditions surveillance system. I've spoken around the occupational health and safety. We're quite proud that the NIOH has been designated as a collaborating center in occupational health by the WHO, and the NIOH plays a major role in teaching and training initiatives around occupational health and safety. We're also partnering with the International Labour Organization to assist Ethiopia on occupational health and safety. So Chair, this is a summary of our performance. As I've highlighted, information technology, human resources, and academic affairs, research and quality. The performance has been has not reached the 100% performance target, but I'll explain that we almost achieved it. And just give an explanation as to what had happened. So these diagrams will show. So we achieved all our targets around finance. We received an unqualified audit report, and that has now been an unqualified report now for the last 2 years. We started off with major qualifications around our expenditure, and that has been turned around. It's been challenging to do that, but we've managed to do it, Chair. We didn't achieve our system's uptime of 99%. We got 97% instead. The turnover ratio did get impacted on by COVID-19 as well. And the employment equity target should have been 85%, but we only achieved 84%. So we were down by 1 percentage point. The performance agreements as well did get impacted through the COVID-19. So we reached 90% instead of the 95% target. And the employees that were trained were also impacted on in the last quarter. That 72% versus 90% according to the workplace skills plan. But we achieved all the other targets in HR with regards to the surveillance of communicable disease. We achieved most of our targets. We unfortunately missed the target on the field epidemiologist qualified. We only got 6 qualified versus the 7. We achieved all our targets with occupational health and safety. With academic affairs, we achieved quite a few of the targets, except that the compliance by laboratories during the quality compliance audits, we achieved 86% versus 90%. We only managed to get 51 of our national central laboratories accredited. Our target was 53. That means it's all the national central laboratories, and we're hoping that we will be able to achieve that target. For the proficiency testing scheme performance targets, we achieved 88% instead of the 90%, and the intern medical scientists that we admitted, we only admitted 27 instead of the 50 that we wanted to admit, but there was an issue where we were trying to sort out the stipends for the intern medical scientists. The HIV PCR test, I did mention that our turnaround time was good for most of the tests except for the HIV PCR test, where we achieved 72% instead of the 85% that must be performed within 96 hours. And the cervical smear test, we achieved 86% versus the 90%. So Chair, I'll move on to human resources. But maybe just to make the point that our targets, and to say again that our targets were off by a short bit. The total number of employees we had at the end of the financial year was 7,532, broken down in these categories. Most of our staff are at the skills and semi-skills level. Our personnel expenditure was 3.9 million. So that's about 46.9 billion, which compared to other institutions is compares quite favorably. We had just short of 6,000 employees who attended short learning programs. We had scholarships and bursaries awarded to disadvantaged students to study towards biomedical technology and the new Bachelor of Health Sciences. We also issued 328 bursaries to NHLS staff for their career development. Our staff turnover is extremely low at 3.1%, and we're quite proud that the NHLS is the preferred employer of choice for professionals in the pathology sector. We've got staff that have been here for 40 years, so it just shows that it is a stable environment that staff do like working in. Our vacancy rate was 8.9%. We looked at the filling of critical posts as also part of our operational efficiency issues. And we're still the largest training provider for registrars, the only training provider. And we provide, we're the only ones who provide intern medical sciences posts. We employ a lot more medical scientists than others. I'm not going to go through the details here of our employment equity target. We've given you what the target is and what current is, and we're continuously working to try to improve the employment equity target. We know that we need to have a lot of improvement in the professional qualified target. We are trying to work on that. And we're working together with the National Department of Health because the pool of resources is dependent on the numbers that qualify from the medical schools. And if the demography is not improved there, it becomes difficult for us to improve on that, but we are trying. So Chair, I've gone through the issues of the financial performance, so I'm not going to go through that now again. I've spoken about the test volume increasing. And Chair, to say that even during the COVID-19 pandemic, the provinces, our collection, some provinces has improved. Even though this is also related to the drop in revenue, but we got 4.7 billion compared to 5.3 billion, but that's also related to some of the financial settlements that we've received from the from Gauteng. Chair, I'm going to ask the CFO to just to comment on the financial performance. To just go through that quickly.
Good day, Chair. Good day, honourable members as well. Chair, as far as my name is Jonas Shai. I'm the acting Chief Financial Officer for the National Health Laboratory Service. Chair, as far as the statement of financial performance is concerned for the 2019-2020 financial year, revenue stood at 9.2 billion. Primarily, this was from the rendering of services due to an upsurge of some of the tests that the CEO and the chair of our board has actually spoken to. All in all, cost of sales stood at 7.6 billion, leaving us with 1.8 billion in terms of gross surplus at that level. Other income was 180 million, and this was primarily due to interest received on the cash balance that we had during the particular year. Our operating expenses stood at 1.3 billion, which left us with the operating surplus of 773 million. We then brought in interest income again. We brought in interest income, on cash of 315 million. And we had fair value adjustments of 23. Interest expense itself stood at 6.2 million. And this was predominantly because of the finance lease that we have, leaving us with a surplus before taxation of 108 billion, Chair. And then we also had to take off taxation, for which primarily relates to the SAVP entity, which is our wholly owned entity, leaving us with a surplus for the period of 1082 billion. As far as subsidies from government are concerned, this is primarily what we got in terms of allocations share. That particular amount stood at 786 million. The liquidity ratios, which we have spoken to through the CEO and the chair of our board as well, stood at 3.5 versus 1, meaning that as far as being liquid is concerned, given the 4 billion that we had in the bank and the comparison between our current assets and our current liabilities, Chair, means that we are sitting at a particularly strong financial position. As far as the summary of the of financial performance is concerned, this particular graph gives the detail that the CEO was actually speaking to in terms of the movement in the net surpluses. We can see that from the 2016-2017, we stood at that 1.9 billion loss or deficit. This moved to a 1.3 billion surplus in the 2017-2018 financial year, being 996 odd million in the 2018-2019 financial year. And as we are reporting for the 2019-2020 financial year, that stood at 1082 in terms of the surplus. There are debt provisions as per note that we have with the, and subsequently we've spoken to the particular debt settlements that we've reached, which we are eternally grateful that the provincial departments continue paying. Creditors days, again, we have spoken to that in terms of the improvement in the creditors days. We are always targeting the 30-day payment in terms of government regulation, so that our particular small suppliers are able as well to pay their, to actually survive as far as small business development is concerned. Debtors days, this particular slide again re-emphasizes the discussions that are currently happening with the different departments as far as settlement is concerned, but largely speaking, we do wait for, as at 2019-2020, we waited for 105 days for settlement of our particular bills. What this slide was attempted to communicate, this particular slide is actually saying that for the amounts that we bill for the different financial years, what ultimately ends up happening is we then show what the departments are actually giving us in relation to what we've billed. And largely speaking, if we just look at 2019-2020, we billed 8.5 billion, we received 8.6 billion. Again, re-emphasizing the fact that provincial departments are paying for historic debt over and above their current bills that we bill them on a monthly basis, which translates into a pretty good picture as far as our finances are concerned and the support from those particular departments.
So, Chair,
in
conclusion, there were a number of projects that were initiated under the period of review. We'll continue to make sure that cost containment is one of the core focus areas in the financial years going ahead. This is going to be especially so with the fact that we will be entering into a very, very deep recession in the country and internationally. We need to ensure that our operational efficiency and effectiveness will be key drivers. We even though we spoke quite a bit around COVID-19, the first patient was first seen in on the 5th of March, and we know that the pandemic will be or has been the biggest challenge facing the NHLF in the country in the new financial year. So Chair, I'd like to chair of the board and the members of the board would like to acknowledge the support of the Minister of Health and the Deputy Minister of Health, all the MECs and heads of the provincial departments, and the portfolio committee for the support. We'd also, on behalf of the chair of the board, also just to thank all the NHLS employees who, in the face of a lot of challenges, continued to ensure that services were delivered to the people of South Africa. So thank you, Chair. I'll stop there. Okay.
Dr. Dlomo, if I may, I just, when I introduced the members of my board, I didn't spot Professor Jeffrey Mpahlele, the vice chairperson of the board, just to acknowledge that he is also with us at this presentation. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. We welcome also Professor Mpahlele. We have welcomed the other members whose names were read to us. Just to clear this before the members come to ask questions and engage with the presentation that has been so detailed. Honorable members, we did receive the annual report of the NHLS on time, like they also all other entities that report and work with the National Department of Health. The challenge, as you might recall, was we were given 2 weeks in the National Assembly to look into the budget review report and have it submitted into the House. There was even a delay from our side, that was now mainly myself and the Secretary, to bring it on time even to the National Assembly. That is why it was actually adopted only this, I think, early 2, 3 or 4 weeks ago. So there has not been a delay from their side and like all other entities. So as we are wrapping up our first term next week, we need to prioritize a space for their annual report and their annual performance plans. All the entities that are like already members have got issues that they would like to raise with the MRC, with the Medical for Council for Medical Aid Schemes. So we would have to really rub them in the next term, probably some of them much earlier than we'd expect. So I wanted just to move that away, because some members might think that they have delayed in bringing their report to us. Not at all. They brought it on time. The following members have requested to engage with their presentation. And honorable members, I'm going to read your name and give you the number. Let me not come in between. As soon as the other member says I'm done, then you come in immediately. Honorable members are in this following order. Honorable Gela, number one. Number two, Honorable Ismail. Number three, Honorable Chirwa. Number four, Honorable Kwahube. Number five, Honorable Van Staden. Number six, Honorable Dr. Thembi Kwayo. Number seven, Honorable Sukers. Number eight, Honorable Wilson. Number nine, Honorable Shengwa. Number 10, Honorable Munyai. And so far, the last hand was Honorable Dr. Jacobs, who's number 11. Honorable members, please, in that order. Thank you. Just remember, we have another item to handle before 1 o'clock.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first welcome the report or the presentation done by the Department of NHLS. I know it was a difficult situation that we were faced as a country. And really, we did very well in terms of responding, despite of the challenges that you were faced as a department. But I'm having a few questions, Chairperson, that I want to raise. The first one is in Program 1 under administration. I just want to check if they can just share with us or explain to us how COVID-19 affected the operations of NHLS. The second one, Chairperson, is about what measures have been taken to improve performance, meeting all the set performance targets that you have set up for yourself as a department. The other one, Chairperson, is on program 3 under occupational and environmental health and safety. I will go straight to the questions, Chairperson. And also we've seen that they've understand, but my questions, Chairperson, is that if they can also explain whether they understand funds are rolled over or returned to the treasury. The other one is about the vacancies in the department. When are all vacancies going to be filled? What are the planned time frames to fill these vacancies, and at what level are these vacancies? The other one, which is also very important when it comes to the municipality, I want to know actually to the department, my question will be, to what extent does this program collaborate with the municipalities? The last one, Chairperson, is a report of the independent auditors on NHLS. NHLS received a qualified audit opinion. We welcome that. For the past 2 years, you did very well to get unqualified audit opinion. But also my question is that please explain the reason for having 1 year contract with the audit firm after we have received good outcomes. The other issue, challenges that you are facing and we have raised previously as a portfolio committee of non-compliance, but I think you are also addressing, which was the issues that were also raised with the Auditor General. But all issues that I wanted to check on your unqualified audit report, whether do you have any matters of emphasis that you must deal with as a department. And also, lastly, I want to appreciate the role that you are playing to save the life of our people, but also thanking to hear that our minister is supporting, the MECs are supporting, because really this, we must make sure that we work together to make sure that we save the life of people of South Africa. With those, Chairperson, we really appreciate, really, but we are looking forward that you improve where it's necessary, and also you fill all the vacant positions that you have in the department. I thank you, Chair.
Next.
Good morning. I'm Hasina Ismail, and thank you for the presentation. I just have a few clarity-seeking questions. Please, can you advise how many laboratories are currently functional and not functional as per breakdown per province, and has each lab got sufficient equipment, or are we running short of equipment in some provinces? Secondly, is that how many epidemiologist vacancies are there as per breakdown per province and per level, please? And what are your current plans to fill such vacancies? Please advise also on the status of the student who failed and meant to graduate in May 2020, if we can just get some clarity on that. Also, please advise the committee or explain to the committee the litigation process against NHLS amounting to 328 million rand and 4.8 million rand respectively relating to the personal injury of the two personnel. It was somewhere on the slides, if I'm not mistaken, for page 205 or 206. Also, please provide detailed explanation on the 78.7 million rand for contingencies and numerous claims against the NHLS. I just had one more question. What are the driving factors for the high rate of disciplinary action that has taken place? I think some of my other questions has already been asked. Yeah, I think that's all for me. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks. Honorable Chirwa.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you to the entity for their presentation. It is definitely welcomed on my side. I just have a few questions nonetheless, because I noticed that there's a decrease of targets here and there in different programs. And if the entity is to cite the COVID-19 pandemic, can they just explain in detail how exactly the COVID pandemic prevented these targets from being achieved or prevented certain targets from being repeated? And in detail, I would really appreciate detail in this case, because when there's a decrease of targets, then there's an issue of capacity of reaching these targets. And if not, I mean, if it's genuinely the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, I would just like to know how that panned out and what then is the case with the year 2021 and the increase of targets, if the lack of increase of targets, noting that we're now on level one. And if the NHLS has a means or a way to navigate the addition or the subtraction of targets, also with the alert levels of the country, especially pertaining to how they affect the processing or administering of those targets. But I would appreciate detail to this effect on which target had to be put off because of COVID and how COVID impacted that particular target. And second question, I think it was asked, on how many of the 268 of your laboratories are functional, and also in relation to this, is there a need for a capacity increase in the NHLS, and what the prospects of that therefore are, and how the portfolio committee can intervene on behalf of the NHLS to put pressure on the NTOH and the minister to ensure that capacity is increased or that there's efforts to increase capacity of the NHLS. And number three, could also the NHLS just tell us more on the dismissed employee for having committed fraud and theft against NHLS for a period of 13 years, particularly because, 13 years is a very long time. And it speaks to the fact that there isn't systemic interventions by the NHLS to curb corruption. And I want to know why this is the case. And to this effect, what then has been done to develop and come up with systemic interventions of ensuring that corruption doesn't persist in the entity? And if there are systemic interventions to curb corruption or to flag it or to root it out in the procurement of tenders and all of those things, what is that system that has been used or that has been devised by the NHLS? And if there is lack then, why then isn't there a systemic development and intervention by the NHLS to ensure that corruption is curbed, especially because there's so many dismissals of workers? I want to know if that is because of corruption. And to this effect, then, if it's not corruption, then what is it? Why are there so many workers being dismissed and hearings and all of that? Because then if it is not corruption or fraud, then it should also raise the concern of workers being treated unfairly at the NHLS. And to this effect, I also want to recommend the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee that an oversight to this effect be done on the NHLS by the Portfolio Committee. And number four, for the purpose of obviously holding the NTOH accountable and them being of service to the challenges faced by the entity, can the entity just divulge what are its major challenges? And how they would want the intervention of the Portfolio Committee of Health to unfold in this case. In detail, obviously, worked in the favor of both the Portfolio Committee of Health and the NHLS. And lastly, I want to inquire about insourcing. I want to know if a majority of your services are still outsourced, like cleaning and security. And if they are, why there aren't means to ensure that insourcing takes place in the entity? Because, I mean, over the years, we know that insourcing is a financial viable option. It's a financially viable option. And above all else, it is in the interest of protection of workers. So I also want to find out about the prospect of insourcing, what has been done by the NHLS to insource. Because this is the thing that we raised the last time that the NHLS appeared in the Portfolio Committee of Health. So I just want an update on that particular point. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Next, Honorable Kwagube.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair. I'm going to run quickly through my questions. And mine are a lot more technical, I suppose, to the board and to the CEO. I think the issue around under expenditure is a concern of 212 million. And perhaps this can be explained, particularly when we look at the fact that we were dealing or we were in the middle of a pandemic, what that is. And I mean, it, you know, perhaps there is a reason for that, and that perhaps the board can explain. And then related to that is also that the program, the research program, continues to overspend as well. You know, is there an explanation why that is the case? And why then does the entity not simply just readjust its budget as opposed to continuously overspending like they did in the past financial year? Because it would seem to me then the logical step would simply then just look at what is needed in that program and then readjust the money that is allocated to it. Then the other issue is I would like to find out on a more broader scale, Chair, you know, the reality is that with COVID-19, none of the entities or the Department of Health in general, none of the entities specifically will probably ever do business as usual. And there's going to have to be a number of changes which are going to have to be effected. In essentially going forward, has the entity sat down to look at what kind of reconfiguration will need to be done in the work of the NHLS, if any, and in the programs and in how that the work is carried out? Because pandemics of this nature are likely going to become a permanent feature of our lives, or you know, we're still going to be dealing with COVID-19 for the next couple of years. And so I would like to understand what plans are being put in place to reconfigure how business is being done, if anything at all, and what have been the key lessons that the entity has learned in order to become a lot more resilient as an organization if you are looking at some of the what has happened over the past year. And then the issue around litigation costs has been covered, but I want to just find out precisely what are some of the issues relating to that. What are some of the issues relating to the litigation here? And then also what plans are in place to build capacity in the Northern Cape, you know, as the province that does not have as many laboratory services as much as any other in the country, understanding the unique circumstances of the Northern Cape, obviously, and it being a vast and rural province, but what plans are in place for the coming years to build capacity in that province and to really rectify the situation? Thank you very much.
Okay. Honorable Van Staden.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody. Thank you for the report. I've just got three clarity-seeking questions. Please bear with me. The Gauteng Department of Health, they are honoring the agreement with NHLS. What I meant to say, they are up to date with the agreement, if you can just confirm that to me. Now, the number of medical intense scientists admitted and trained in the NHLS, I see you said in the slide, 45 is not achieved. I just want to know, has the delay in the recruitment been sorted, or is this problem still not sorted? And if not, what is the reason for this? And then just for clarity, due to a backlog in DNS testing at the police service, but they have now a backlog in rape cases, and it is currently resulting that court cases is also now having a backlog due to the backlog at the police forensic laboratories. I just want to know, are the NHLS in any position to perhaps help the South African Police Service in this regard to get rid of this backlog? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Dr. Tembeguayo.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for also the NHLS presentation and the manner in which they prepared for us today. This program has many units and with managers acting on acting capacity. For an example, Mr. Shai, who was presenting to us the finances of NHLS, introduced himself as an acting financial officer. And he's not the only one, but there exist throughout the NHLS a number of positions where we have people acting on acting capacity. The problem is, like, for an example, the acting financial officer deals with very important issues of the NHLS, and that position not to be filled on a permanent basis. But I would like to know, when will that function be filled, so that there can be, in actual fact, more proper ways of handling financial matters. Explain the rationale for inequitable distribution of internal medical scientists and registrars, because Gauteng and Western Cape have more of these scientists than any other provinces, as the information is reflected on page 91. So why is it happening like this? And then the following one is in connection with the last one. Explain the sudden increase for demand for laboratory tests in Limpopo specifically, and explain the status now and how has this been resolved and prevented from reoccurring. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Sukers, Ms. Sukers.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to thank the NHLS for their presentation. My question is around a report that was released in February, where there was a report that regulatory delays cost us South Africa vital information on the spread of COVID-19. And bureaucratic delays between SAPRA and the NHLS was blamed. Could they just clarify or give us information on whether that was sorted out, and whether all provinces, only four provinces, where data was received, and what the reasons were for the delays mentioned? Thank you, Chair.
Wilson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the NHLS. Forgive me if I don't turn my camera on. I have connection problems, and I hope that you can hear me. I think in principle I'm covered by most of the questions asked by colleagues ahead of me. There's just a couple of concerns I have. It is great to see that you have greatly improved your liquidity in terms of the billions that you have in your balances. However, there is mention in your report or in a report of several litigations that run into very many millions. And if this continues, or if we have a situation where the judgment is in favor of the litigators, your liquidity won't last. So if you could just update us with that situation. You know, these things are always quite important, and particularly if there is going to be news around this. It is great to see that you have reduced your outstanding monies owing to you by the provinces from 6 to 4 billion. However, 4 billion remains an astronomically huge number. And, you know, I would really like to know that when this is going to be, you have mentioned that they are paying and that they have stuck to the agreement. What sort of time period are we looking at to actually to get rid of this 4 billion outstanding debt? It's astronomically huge. Concerned about your under expenditure, and there's under expenditure on several of your programs. Can you please advise, is this under expenditure actually being rolled over, or is it being returned to Treasury? Those kind of under expenditures, with all due respect, could be well used in other entities in the Department of Health right now, where we have real struggles. We are preparing and anticipating it is a real situation that we could be going into the third wave of COVID. We're going into the winter. We've already seen one mutation of this COVID. There's potentially an opportunity for COVID to transform itself yet again. Can you tell us what preparations you have put in place for a potentially rather large third wave that we could be possibly approaching? And an update of how many of your NHLS workers have actually already been vaccinated. Vaccinations are a huge problem. The vaccines are a huge problem. And laboratory service workers are obviously highly exposed. And I would be delighted to know that they are actually being vaccinated as well. And finally, I need to talk about the forensic laboratories that fall under SAPS at this moment. We have been advised that the forensic laboratories are moving to the NHLS and will no longer fall under the umbrella of the police service. Can you please confirm that this is correct? And in actual fact, if it is correct, please can you confirm what negotiations have taken place and what discussions have taken place, number one, with the unions, number two, with the workers of the forensic laboratories who will now have to move under a new umbrella, and if they are actually happy with this, because our understanding is they are not, and that no negotiations have been taken place. And in light of the huge, massive backlogs of the forensic laboratories in terms of particularly autopsies around crime, how in your current circumstances, when you are already battling, will the NHLS actually be able to cope with this? Because I don't think it's, number one, I don't know that we want to take on that responsibility for a failure of the forensic laboratories under the police service. And I'm not sure if we can get it corrected. However, having said that, there are thousands of cases in courts outstanding, awaiting autopsies, tests, and those kind of things on bodies that are unfortunately still lying in laboratories awaiting tests. Your update on this would be appreciated. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Shengwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. First of all, let me welcome the comprehensive report in such a way that one would understand everything. Besides that, let me applaud of my KZN for paying in full that debt. I was very happy for that. Coming to the business, in relation to human resource, it should be noted that the NHL appears to be the largest training provider for registrars, medicine, science, technologies, as well as laboratory assistants. One could perhaps ask whether the NHL intend to roll out more bursaries and scholarships. It appears from your presentation that 12 scholarships and bursaries were awarded to the disadvantaged students to study towards a national diploma in biomedical technical bachelor of health science. And one could also ask specifically what critical position remain vacant at the institution, because your record has a vacancy rate of 8.9%. The last one, Mark and I have covered me, but I'm also going to emphasize that the municipality that has given this opportunity of having these bursaries, how many are they per province, per district? I thank you.
We'll have Honorable Chief Chilith Munyai and Dr. Jacobs. There's been another third hand of Honorable Sokacha. So those three remaining hands, starting with Honorable Munyai. Honorable Dr. Jacobs, come through if Honorable Munyai is still struggling.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the presentation this morning by NHLS. I only have two questions which I want to raise. One is on the historic debt, and the other one is on the viral load test. On your historic debt, I realize that you mentioned two provinces. I've heard what Honorable Slengwa said just now, but I think I understood it differently. I understand that 1% of your, 21% of your income, you had shown as a part payment related to historic debt by Gauteng Province Department of Health, and that you do not mention within that payments received, any payments received from the KZN Department of Health. So I want to ask you whether you have agreements with these provinces in place, which I'm sure you would have, but if you can allude a bit more to it. Are the other provinces also behind in terms of the historic debt, and whether they are honoring those agreements? And thirdly, whether you have plans on trying to get them to honor those agreements if they are not in place. We realize you have a surplus, and it's wonderful to see the surplus, but of course you'd be able to do so much better if you are able to recoup all of the outstanding funds. And then lastly, on the viral load tests, I note an increase in the number of tests of from 5.2 million to 5.7 million tests. Now, would all of these viral load tests be, for example, HIV viral load tests? And what would be the contribution in March last year of viral load tests on COVID patients, whether that could be attributed to it? Thank you very much. I do not have any other questions. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Sokacha or Honorable Munyai, any one of you who is able to speak now?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Sokacha here. I've got one question only. One other question was touched by Honorable Wahube on the issue of the Northern Cape. I just want to check, Chair, Dr. Jacobs, touch on briefly on it, on the issue of HIV and AIDS. Any progress in as far as a vaccine is concerned in South Africa and abroad? Can the team just brief us, is there any progress in the vaccination in a vaccine on HIV and AIDS. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Munyai, it's your turn. Okay. Honorable Munyai seems to have a challenge with the login. May I also add one or two from my side? Chair, Dr. Chetty, you need just to remind me, by the way, your request for accreditation with SANAS, what does it do to you? I can't just remember, I must have missed that. Number two, in the light of the question asked by Honorable Wilson, I wanted to expand on that. What is your plan in the event you take over this service? Are the forensic pathologists also now going to come in and be trained within your fold? Because that has got some implications. You'll recall that one of the things that has made you not good has been this issue of lumping up a full blood specimen results and the money for that. You have been taking it, part of it to be a training, a grant, and until and unless you separated that, things were not going well. I am tempted to check who to write a letter to thank this hardworking program. I cannot mince my words. I have known NHLS working from the other side, and NHLS has not always been like this. It has been a shamble. And I don't know whether to time this with the coming in of you, Dr. Chetty, the CEO of the new board, but it has not been a very good story to tell. We are the pride of the country on you. Let me just say, right now we are talking about the department is lagging behind, or maybe the whole government, not department, in lagging behind in terms of vaccine development into this country. We still rely on this and that country. But on your side, in terms of testing specimens, we are doing so well, and we need to commend you. But it has not always been like this. I need to know whether it is the minister's leadership or it is you responding to him that things have gone this way. Because there are two provinces that are very large in their population, KZN and Gauteng. And if those two provinces, who probably would already have a massive number of specimens sent to you, not paying, you actually, it doesn't matter whether Northern Cape and Northwest are paying well, it does not help you. Now these two provinces have responded positively, and we do not want to go back to where they were not paying. We just need to actually check and commend you, because them not paying was also related to the poor governance of NHLS. You can't pay someone. You also see that it cannot, a person is charging you for one full blood specimen twice or three times. Now you seem to be very competent on that part, and you would like to see whether you continue on that part. But it would be very important for me to know who to thank personally on this matter that seems to have done very well. Is Honorable Munyai available now?
Yes, Honorable Chair.
We are the last one. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to know that before COVID-19 arises or infects South Africa, there were blood samples that were taken by NHLS for the genetic sequencing. These also include the Defence for South African Defence Force and other people. All I want to get were the results of this genetic sequencing provided for. What were the results? And were some of the blood specimens taken to United States or any other country? Who are the international partners? Because we want to understand as to whether the consent of these people were received as required for ethical research and testing, when this specimen, blood specimen, were taken. Can we get the feedback on that regard, please? On the issues of the performance of the NHLS, indeed it was troubled with corruptions, rampant corruptions, and I think now it has stabilized. But the key issue that I want us to do, that I would recommend to do, is that the people that are acting, can we get the at senior executive management, people fully appointed and all areas of testing and technicians throughout the country. Lastly, I agree that Northern Cape, it has been the only province without a lab. Can we get, if that support has been really soft since we raised this issue long time before?
We are done, Professor Boch and all other board members. We bring you back to respond and assist us with clarity-seeking questions and your further input there.
Thanks very much, Dr. Dlomo. I'll lead with the governance questions and see if any of my fellow board executive members would like to add to that. And then there are a lot of detailed questions that will be in the hands of the CEO. So first thing is, you know, I it's always very valuable to come to the portfolio committee because you ask a lot of questions that make us think and think strategically and operationally and how we can improve. And I do want to appreciate the very detailed questions because it really means that portfolio committee members have really studied what is quite a substantial and long report in some detail. I'll start with your question, Dr. Dlomo, responsibility for success, I believe, goes across. It's not just one individual or one person. What it is that we received very good support from both the former and current Minister of Health and the Director General, the former Director General and now the current Director General, although he is more in the next financial year. The board has been really diligent in carrying out its duties, in its role. But clearly there's a very significant part of the success is down to the CEO. What she has been able to achieve as a CEO together with her executive team. Just to answer the questions in relation to the executives and the appointments, just to say that in NHLS, like many other entities, our executives on executive level staff are not on permanent appointments, they're on five-year contracts and on contract appointments. We have just recently appointed a head of the National Institute for Occupational Health. We had initial interviews for the National Institute for Communicable Diseases and the Executive Director, Human Resources. We were not satisfied with the candidates. We have a further interview scheduled in the next couple of weeks. We did appoint a chief information officer, and the acting CFO is sort of unrelated, if you like, to the appointments, and we can talk about that independently. Next thing I wanted to touch on was the COVID-related questions. And Dr. Dlomo, Honorable Chair, my suggestion is that my request to you is to call a special meeting for the NHLS to present on our work under COVID and all the issues and implications. The annual report we are presenting today ends really before the COVID pandemic took off. Into April, and this report ends at the end of the 2019-20 financial year, whereas most of the COVID work is during the annual report period of 1920-21. Suffice it to say that, and then we can go into all the details of how we built up laboratory capacity, how we deployed mobile vehicles, how we trained staff, how we got the expert capability of the NICD and NIOH on board, how we geared up to get the volume of tests, how we managed to secure supplies and equipment in the face of global competition, and many, many other angles and aspects. And I think that in my mind is a presentation of its own, and I would appreciate that. But suffice it to say, yes, COVID did reduce the overall number of laboratory tests requested, in particular in other areas, including HIV and TB. It did reduce our income. We did have to make massive investments. We spent, as I said, more than 2 billion rand investing in COVID-related capability. There were many aspects to what we achieved. Our laboratories were not closed down during COVID. We continue to be functional in terms of meeting the needs and responsibilities that we have for laboratory tests as part of the health service. So we can go into a lot of detail, but I heard you say that you have scheduled till 1 o'clock and you have other matters as well to deal with. And I would really request a special presentation to the portfolio committee. You asked about our auditors. Just to explain that it's good business practice to change auditors after a certain cycle. And we were due to rotate auditors at that point. For various operational reasons and in consultation with the Treasury, we retained those auditors for an additional year with a view to appointing a new cycle of long-term auditors. In terms of the question that we were asked about increasing the capacity in the NHLS and our prospects there, I think there are two parts to the answer. The one is that we are constantly working to move smarter in the work smarter in the NHLS. We are looking, CEOs looking more carefully at workloads in different laboratories. There's increasing mechanization of laboratory tests so that the laboratory technician doesn't have to stand with a pipette anymore. And in the old days, you get high volume machines that work faster and cheaper. And we have looked at that, like in Listeria, for example. We were able to spend 10 million rand on a machine and dramatically increase our capacity for Listeria testing without really needing dramatically more staff to do the job. So I think that in terms of the assistance from the portfolio committee, I do believe that the most important thing is that as provinces face fiscal constraints under tightened budgets, it's going to be very important that they recognize the role that the NHLS plays and puts us as a priority debtor to pay, because quite simply, if we don't get the payments in, we will struggle to maintain our performance and our viability of our services. So I think for us, the most important support would be to continue to encourage provinces to continue the improved payment arrangements. You know, if our payment drops by 10%, if our levels of payment drop by 10%, we lose almost a billion rand in income. It's as simple as that. And that would create real difficulties. And again, this year we have kept our tariff increases very low so that we can't rely on higher bills for the work we do. In terms of the issue of outsourcing and insourcing, the board made a policy decision a few years ago to insource, and we have insourced cleaners, messengers, security staff, and so on. So we've had a major insourcing program and a move towards full benefits of NHLS employment for those that have been insourced. In terms of the you raised the question of the forensic testing. The CEO will go into some detail with you, but I just want to be clear that the NHLS is not taking over all forensic pathology and laboratory testing in the country. That was never the request to us. We are taking over a particular slice within the responsibilities of the Department of Health. So the CEO will go into the details there and the negotiations and where we are at the moment. But for that slice, which we are asked to take over, we are ready to do that, and we believe that we can bring the expertise and efficiencies of the NHLS there with a view to clearing the backlog over a reasonable period of time and maintaining high service standards for what we are asked to do. In terms of the liquidity and the 4 billion, just to be clear here that you know, we've worked very hard to get to this point, we do need the money that we've had. In terms of COVID, we started the financial year with 4 billion, but that meant that when COVID struck, we were able to rapidly deploy 2 billion of that. So our reserves went from 4 billion, our cash in the bank, if you like, to 2 billion as we were able to gear up to meet our national responsibilities. And of course, we have not recouped all of that investment by any means. And if you exclude grant income, at the moment, our cash in the bank is around about 2 billion. So, it is important to maintain these levels of liquidity and so that we can invest in advancing our services and what we provide. But in terms of the payment on the provinces, I just want to give a broad clarification here. So the situation is that with KwaZulu-Natal, is that historically KwaZulu-Natal, when it then later joined the NHLS after the other provinces, was paying a fixed fee, and they were paying approximately half of their use. So at the time they were paying about 50 million rand a month, but procuring about 100 million rand a month of services. And so the major big change with KwaZulu-Natal is KwaZulu-Natal has come on board and is paying the full amount of the use. So instead of paying the fixed amount, they are now paying the roughly 100 million rand a month of services that they procure, which meant that our income from KZN doubled. But there is still some historic outstanding debt from a number of years ago. And therefore, a lot of the 4 billion that's owing, quite a lot of that is attributable to the historic period where KZN was paying 50 million of the roughly 100 million rand a month that they were using. And that is a matter that's quite complex to settle. So if you like, the more recent debt is much, much lower than the 4 billion. You're right, there are some provinces that have more historic debt than others. Some of it is bigger in amounts because there are bigger provinces that use more tests. Others are a little bit bigger in percentage-wise. The important thing for us is that there were times where the NHLS was receiving, would bill a certain amount out in a year and was receiving, say, about 80% payment for what it was billing. Now we're well into more into the 90s. So now, in terms of what we bill, whether it's last year's debt or this year's debt, we are getting in roughly the amount that we bill. So clearly, yes, we want to keep reducing the historic debt, but the payment patterns are keeping us liquid. In terms of the role of the NHLS as a provider for training, the CEO will answer the specific questions, but just to clarify our role in terms of the Act, We are not a university. We provide a service learning platform where pathologists, scientists, and laboratory technologists and technicians gain practical training experience and work. We pay the salaries of the medical doctors who are specialist pathologists, and we pay towards medical scientists and other intern training as well. So we make substantial contributions to training and to supporting staff in training way beyond the specific bursaries that we give. And we work in support of and in collaboration with the universities and the universities of technology in that regard. So I think that those are the questions at the level of the board in terms of governance, in terms of strategy, in terms of the board's role in oversight, in setting the budget and setting the conditions of service. I think also, you know, just to end then, Dr. Dlomo, in terms of the recipe for success, if you like, in the NHLS, I think we've also had a very positive support from our majority union. The Nahawu have worked collaboratively as well, although currently it's a little bit tense, but there has been positive labor environment that we've managed to develop. And I think some of that is due to the integrity with which the board and the CEO have engaged with labor and looked into labor and human resources matters, but also the commitment of our 7,000 plus staff. We have employed almost an extra 1,000 staff during the last period beyond this annual report to cope with increasing demand and changes in the requirements for services. So even though you may see the 8% vacancy as high, our staff numbers have increased, and we have filled a number of posts, but we're not seeing if you like, the post numbers are more like a credit card limit. It's not necessarily a target to hit that limit, like a credit card limit. It's rather to give us the space to respond to the labor needs to deliver on our mandate. We have been filling a lot of vacancies, and we are looking into them, but we also have to make sure as we do that, that those laboratories with less work and more staff, we would not necessarily fill a post that becomes vacant there if there's limited work and more staff than necessary. We'd rather shift that post to a laboratory that is under huge pressure and overworked with too little staff. So we do actively manage our staffing numbers and our staffing allocations. In terms of the Northern Cape, just to say that a lot of our laboratory platform is linked to where public sector hospitals are. So most of our laboratories are tied to where there are government hospitals, and then we serve the health centers and clinics and municipalities in that area from those hospitals. We transport specimens that are complex that need higher level laboratories to our regional and academic laboratories. So, but we will have a more careful look as the board at the capacity that we have in the Northern Cape and whether we are fulfilling our mandate. But certainly we are driven by values of equitable access for all South Africans to the health laboratory services and other services we provide. And we do pride ourselves in the manner in which we are able to fulfill what is a national and constitutional responsibility to continually improve equitable access of all to healthcare. Thank you very much, Dr. Dlomo. I'll hand over then to the CEO. But before I do that, I just want to check if any of my board colleagues, Professor Mphaklele, Professor Mariba, Professor Ross, and Advocate Mayinga would like to just add anything from a board and governance level to my response. Dr. Kuno, I think it's obvious that Dr. Chetty and most of her team are sitting in the boardroom. We are speaking from home. We are speaking from the knowledge that we carry in our head as board members in response to your questions. We don't have anyone prompting us, but I just want to say that the CEO should feel free to add to anything that we've spoken about that she feels we should have maybe covered more fully. Thanks, Advocate Mayinga.
Thank you, Professor Buch, and thanks to the chairperson, Dr. Dlomo. My name is Tiwe Mayinga. I'm the chairperson for the Human Resource Remuneration, Human Resources Committee for the NHLS. So Professor Buch has dealt with most of the questions relating to the human capital aspect. There's one item that I would like to add as a matter of emphasis to his presentation or output. There was a resounding concern from most of the members, Honorable Chira, Wilson, Munyai, on the corruption, what systemic implementation do we have in place to cap corruption, and importantly, on the acting positions that we have in the organization. So I'd like to give you an outline from a governance point of view. Professor Buch has mentioned that as a board, we endeavor to be diligent in our approach, and we take that seriously upon ourselves as a responsibility. One of the items that have been topical in our country and have been a great point of concern is obviously the aspect of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So as the board of the NHLS and being the accounting authority, we understand that we have a duty of care, and we are the accountable authority that needs to instill discipline in the organization, but importantly ensure that we are fully functional from a corporate governance point of view, and all our actions have been informed by that desire or the understanding of where we need to be as an organization. So it might appear as if we are in endless litigation battles. However, that is the drive behind our actions. So from curbing corruption from a systematic point of view, we as a board have ensured that we have passed the relevant framework in terms of policies for implementation in the organization for adherence, because we believe that in our oversight role or responsibility, we need to put policies and frameworks in place, which will then govern the activities within the institution. So we have done that, and we believe that that's a major a strength that we have, obviously, as a board to ensure oversight. However, those policies need to be implemented by the executive team in the organization, as we are obviously sitting at the accounting level as a board, and we're not involved in the daily activities. So we have trusted our management, the executive team, in the implementation of the same, and it's assuring to us as a board that you have noted the hard work that the executive have put in this regard, and we are acknowledging the CEO and his team for the good work that the organization has embarked on. So it is for that reason that when there's a breakdown in the system, like we have in this particular case, regarding the acting CFO role, which is where I wanted to highlight your attention to, we then have ensured that we consequence manage every situation, and that we cannot avoid, or rather we cannot afford, to have a breakdown in terms of our governance process, and we institute the relevant action to correct same so that we ensure continuous oversight and importantly implementation of those policies. So it is for that reason that we are sitting with vacancies, for example. So you have noted a concern that we've got an acting CFO, and that's not ideal considering the nature of the matters that they deal with. And we do share the same sentiment. However, from a business continuity point of view, it has become necessary that we have an acting CFO, because we've had to deal with governance issues and labor-related processes relating to the CFO that we had appointed permanently into the role. And that appointment was made the beginning of last year, but we've unfortunately had to be at this stage where we require the services of an acting CFO, and only for a minimal period, which is 3 months in this case, whilst we fulfill and complete the labor processes regarding our permanently employed CFO. On the vacancies in general, it's also important to note that we only have two members who are acting in an acting capacity at the executive level, which is the CFO one that I have addressed, and secondly, three in fact, and secondly, the executive of the NICD and human resources executive. So the human resources executive came as a natural attrition where the human resources director resigned to further their interests somewhere else, and we've had to embark on a recruitment process to replace them. That process was attended to. We went for the first rounds of interviews, and we came to the end of the process when we couldn't find anybody suitable to fulfill the role. And as a result, we've had to re-advertise and engage in the second process to appoint the HR executive. So like Professor Buch mentioned, that process is on the go. We are hoping to make an appointment by the end of March for the individual to fill that role on a permanent basis. The same applies for the NICD vacancy, which is the third executive vacancy. We also engaged in recruitment, went through the process, there were no suitable candidates, we've had to re-advertise, and we are again engaging to close that chapter again with a targeted date for the end of March. So those are the only acting positions in the organization. So it's not as if it's a culture in the organization that we have staff members in an acting capacity, but it's only done in matters or areas where it's absolutely necessary. So in a nutshell, that's what we're doing from the human resources perspective, and I hope it gives assurance to the members, Dr. Susan, Honorable Jela, and Ishmael on the vacancy aspect and the continuous control from a governance point of view. Thank you.
Thanks. And Dr. Dlomo, maybe if I can just come in here. I mean, we have put in place a number of systemic prevention measures. For example, our control measures in terms of databases on procurement and processes are in place. The CEO, as you know, has had a particularly strong history in this area and has been applying a range of measures. But I do want to say that the NHLS in the early period of the COVID-19 pandemic did face PPE corruption. And I don't want it to look like that hadn't happened. And then you said, well, why didn't you mention this? But what I can tell you is that the board, together with the CEO and particularly the CEO's effort, we have picked that up. We have laid criminal charges. We've had a forensic audit and disciplinary processes are underway, looking both at negligence on the part of some of the managers in terms of their management and oversight, as well as corruption on the part of some employees. So we have shared our forensic audit with the SIU and the Commercial Crimes Unit of SAPS, and we continue to work with them and support them as they investigate these matters, not just on the nation's behalf, but also to our benefit. So we are dealing very actively with that. And I just thought, once we're touching on this, it's there. But these are matters outside of the terrain of the annual report for 2019-2020. Thanks. So I don't know if any other board members would like to add anything before I hand over to the CEO. All right, Dr. Chetty, it's over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. So with some of the questions, I'll try to answer as much of them, but we've also got our executive management team here that will also respond. Chair, let me state up front that the successes that we've had in the NHLS has been a joint effort between the board, the executive management team, and as you stated, more importantly, the staff of the NHLS who have worked tirelessly in order to achieve this. With regard to the question from Ms. Geller, The issue around the impact of COVID-19 on the performance targets, and this has also been asked by others as well, the full impact of COVID-19 was really felt in the new financial year. But just to give you an example of the last quarter and how it impacted, the lockdown really started towards the end of March, but we did have issues of staff being affected, and so for example, the workplace skills plan got affected because of that. And remember, we started preparing from about January, when immediately after we heard what was going on in the Wuhan district. So this did impact on us. So the performance agreements, for example, some of the staff were not available in order to do that. But we felt it a lot more in the new financial year with regards to the impact on COVID-19. The other impact that we also felt was that we were, the whole country was in lockdown. So it meant a number of organizations, for example, SANAS, which does the accreditation of our facilities, they closed down completely, so our accreditation got affected. And they were sort of a number, so even with the proficiency testing scheme, that also got impacted on. But as I indicated, we felt a bit of it during that last quarter and more of it thereafter. With regards to the issue around the underspending of funds, I will ask the acting CFO to just summarize just the main points which we've got in the document around some of the underspending. Just to say that if there is underspending on the conditional grants, then it is necessary for us to return that to Treasury. And with regards to the issue of surpluses, we have to write to Treasury and motivate as to why we should retain our surplus. All public entities have to do this, and based on that motivation, the Treasury will decide as to whether we keep our surplus or not. We've been very fortunate in that the motivation that we put to Treasury, they have agreed for us to keep those surpluses. Also, just to talk around the vacancies, there's a number of members who have asked that question. During COVID-19, a number of the vacancies were filled in the new financial, in the last financial year, that's 2021. But also just to say, it's extremely difficult for any organization to fill all its vacancies, for a number of reasons, but part of it also being from a budget point of view. So we very carefully calculate from our budget how many vacancies would we be able to fill, and generally we do fill up to whatever has been budgeted for. So it is budget driven. There's also certain categories of staff where it's difficult to fill those vacancies because of scarcity of skills. And we've put in plans in place where we have difficulties, say, in some of the pathologist posts, of being able to do that. With regard to municipalities, not a lot of our work gets done with the municipalities, but there is a lot of infection control work that we actually do with the municipalities. Also, just to say, with regard to the unqualified audit, we are pleased that we've had an unqualified audit now for the last 2 years. With regard to the matters of emphasis, the acting CFO will speak on that. Also, just to say that under the PSMA, our auditors get appointed for a period of 3 years. That approval gets done and is approved by the board. We have to renew, however, according to the PFMA, is we send a letter to the Auditor General every year in order for them to confirm the appointment of those auditors. And according to the PFMA, it's only done for a period of 1 year. So every year we have to get the AG to approve those auditors being appointed. With regard to the issue from the member Ismail, we've got about 231 laboratories. All of them are fully functional, and we also have depots at certain of the institutions. I'm going to ask Professor Melisana to talk around the students who failed and what has been put into place with regards to that. The issue around the injuries on duty, I'm going to ask the acting HR executive, Ms. Mofigeng, to respond to that. I think the board members have spoken with regards to the issues of the disciplinary issue. Member Chewa has asked, I think I've spoken to the COVID-19 targets and the number of labs that we have. We are making sure that our labs are fully capacitated with regards to experience with procurement of equipment, especially during this past year. However, there have been a lot of equipment that we bought to capacitate the labs, especially for COVID-19. But we're also working on a whole modernization of infrastructure for the NHLS, and we're moving a lot towards automation. We've actually got state-of-the-art equipment in a number of labs, and we're also looking at digitization in order to take us forward into the future. But I will acknowledge that, you know, where there are challenges, we are trying our utmost to sort out those procurement problems and invest in with regards to that. Chair, the chair has spoken to the issues around some of the dismissals. Let me reiterate that we have a very harmonious relationship with our union. We've got a very good, strong policy with regards to our workers and making it sure that everyone gets treated fairly and gets treated well. We've spoken around the outsourced services. The board has taken a policy decision to insource all of the services. We've insourced the gardeners, the cleaners, the security. So that has been done. Mr. Shai will speak on the under expenditure of 212 million, and Professor Melisana will speak on the overpayment on the research program. But let me state that our research program is prioritized. It's one of our mandates. And we're very proud of the research that gets done by the NHLS and its institutes. You can see it in the number of papers that that has been published, and we're at the cutting edge of a whole lot of innovative research. We're looking at the whole issue of innovation, and perhaps it would be very nice if members could come and see and tour our facilities, because I think when we were students and medical officers, it's fascinating to see how much the technology has advanced. We're continuously looking at the NHLS's structure to look at to ensure that the structure matches what is required. And the issue around Northern Cape, we are continuously looking at building up the Northern Cape. Let me just say, this is an example. Northern Cape used to send all of its COVID-19 testing to the Western Cape. We've now built up services in the Kimberley lab so that it has become self-sufficient in order to be able to do COVID-19 testing. So we're continuously keeping that in mind. With regards to Mr. van Staden's question on the settlement agreement, Gauteng has been very steady in making payments towards a settlement agreement, and it's reduced the debt quite substantially to just over 300 million that's been left, and they're committed to making sure that gets paid. With regard to the medical scientists, again, the Professor Melisana can speak to that, but that situation has been rectified, and in fact, we are taking more medical scientists now than we had before. Just let me explain, as there's been a number of questions around the forensic pathology. So there's three different aspects that need to be spoken to. The police have got their own forensic pathology, forensic services, in order to help them do their own investigation. That is completely independent from the Department of Health. It belongs to the police, and there's no transfer of those services through to either the Department of Health or to the NHLS. The forensic chemistry labs have been under the National Department of Health, and it's separate from the forensic pathology services. The forensic pathology services work under the provincial departments of health and the National Department of Health. They're the ones who are responsible for the autopsy services and the post-mortems and everything else. They are not coming through to the NHLS. It's only the forensic chemistry labs which will be coming through to the NHLS. That has already been promulgated by the president. But in order to also answer, I think, Member Wilson's question, the negotiations with the unions have to be done by the National Department of Health, and the National Department of Health is continuing with those negotiations with their unions. Once their unions agree, then it will come across through to the NHLS. We do think that there are distinct advantages to having it in the NHLS. Well, not do things we know, we are committed to making sure that those services improve. The forensic chemistry labs are responsible for blood alcohol testing, for testing of food laboratories, and for testing of toxicology to assist the criminal justice. So perhaps we could have another session to just talk a bit more around that. Chair, the issues that have been raised by Dr. Tebukayo, I think has been responded to by the chair. Ms. Suka's question, Chair, I have to admit, I didn't quite get what was the issue and which article she was talking to, because there's just been so many. But just to say, the SAHPRA, with regards to testing, SAHPRA sends us to say, can you please test this antigen test or this antibody test or this PCR test? There's been issues around the antigen test, because there's been problems with getting the assays. But we've been working around the clock to make sure that all of this gets done. We don't report through to the suppliers. We then provide SAHPRA with the reports, and then they decide as to whether it gets registered or not. But perhaps if I can get specific details, I can respond to it. The issue around the litigations and how it will impact on liquidity, the question from Ms. Wilson, I think we need to speak around each one of the individual cases, but overall, those issues should not be impacting on the NHLS liquidity. The chair of the board has mentioned that with regards to the third wave and our preparedness for it, I had updated the presentation, but I don't think we'll have time. But I'll send it through to the portfolio committee on all the testing that we've done. We're very geared up to cope with the third wave. In January alone, we did 800,000 tests for COVID-19, which is almost double what we've been doing in the previous months. We did have a challenge in Eastern Cape initially. We caught up with that backlog very quickly. We then had a challenge in KZN, but we also caught up with that backlog, and we've made a lot of plans in order to ensure that we'll be able to deal with the third wave. We've got 718 staff members that have been vaccinated thus far, but the laboratory workers, the healthcare workers, will get vaccinated hopefully over the next month. And I've spoken around the forensic services. So with member Schlangwa's question, Professor Molisana will deal with the issue of the training providers. And we're still trying to make arrangements with the KZN Department of Health in order to get that historic debt before 2016 to see if we can reach some settlement agreement on that. With regards to the HIV and AIDS program and the vaccine for HIV, as well as Member Munyai's question on the genotyping, I'm going to ask Professor Adrian Curran to respond to that. Also just to say that the with regards to your issues around provinces not paying previously, we are pleased. We've got a very good working relationship with all the provinces, with the HODs, where we continuously liaising with them. Our improvement in our billing system and our improvement in governance has helped with them paying towards the debt. We also know that provinces are struggling with regards to their expenditure and that there will be challenges. We will have to continue working with the provinces in order to ensure that what's an extremely vital service remains sustainable. And Chair, just as a closing remark from myself, just to underscore the importance of laboratory and pathology services. Internationally, Chair, 85% of all diagnoses made in patients is made through laboratory and pathology services. So without pathology and laboratory services, the whole health system will basically crumble. Just on the last note, just to thank the chair of the board and the board and the portfolio committee for the support that has been given through to the NHLS. So thanks, Chair. I will ask each of the executive members to just very quickly run through their questions.
Thank you, Chair. Jonathan Shai again, Acting CFO. Chair, the two questions that I'm going to be dealing with that the CEO had asked that I deal with are the matters of emphasis relating to the audit report and the spending per program as far as over and under expenditures are concerned. Maybe if I can just give a little bit more detail with regards to the matters of emphasis in our particular 2019-2020 financial year. Largely speaking, there was a matter that was emphasized of the correction of errors relating to accrued expenses and the revaluation of buildings. The accrued expenses was also a matter of interpretation, which between ourselves and the Auditor General, we do have a particular interpretation that we've vetted down. That's the error adjustment. Also to highlight from the compliance part of our particular audit was expenditure management and procurement relating to the regular expenditure that members have actually highlighted in the CEO and then Prof has actually spoken to in terms of consequence management as such. So those would be the matters of emphasis that related to our unqualified financial position. As far as the spending patterns are concerned, we did speak to the different programs themselves, and I will go into a little bit more detail there. As far as Program 1 is concerned, Program 1 includes... Yes, so Program 1 would be the financial management, the governance, the IT, and the HR. That's where the 212 million under expenditure was actually picked up. That particular under expenditure related largely to the continuous management of labor costs and also maybe filling in only the critical positions that were actually needed. So you do not want a situation where support actually is bigger than the actual main service line, and as such that would relate to that. As far as Program 2 is concerned, again, the same management of direct labor costs led to that particular over expenditure in that particular program. For Program 3, this was due to the vacancies budgeted for but not filled. As far as the anticipated volumes did not materialize as far as expenses are concerned. And then within the fourth program, which would be the teaching and training, the academic affairs, research, and quality assurance field. The overspending on labor there was due to an intake of more medical office community service than what was budgeted for as far as the provision for teaching and training is concerned. So, Chair, with those answers, I think I've dealt with the two questions that the CEO had asked that I deal with. Thank you.
And perhaps just to deal with this issue around the budget cut. As you're aware, a number of a number of departments will be having budget cuts. Our conditional grants for the new financial year for the NICD, the NIOH, and the teaching and training and research grant has been reduced, and we're busy working on plans to look at how best do we deal with that. Thanks, Chair. I'm going to ask, and sorry, Chair, just to mention then with regard to finances, with regard to the debt, the provinces, most of the provinces have cleared up previous year debts. That's Free State, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and Western Cape. There's small amounts in these provinces for the 2019-2020 financial year, but this is just to give you an example of how far we have gone with regard to that. Also just to say that in discussions with the provinces, what we do is we try to clear up the previous year debt so that we have zero balance with regard to that. We're working together with Eastern Cape and Northern Cape, where we're trying to get those debts cleared up. And as I said, Gauteng has been paying towards their historic debt and have also been paying towards the current debt. And KZN has been extremely good in paying the current debt. It's just we need to negotiate around the historic one. So thank you very much, Chair. I'll ask Prof. Lissana to respond.
Thank you very much, Seal, and thanks to the Chair, and just a few questions to respond to. If I can just start with the issue about the intern medical scientists. So we were not able to reach the target in this year that we're talking about because we actually needed to review the stipends that were being paid to the interns, and this caused a delay in recruitment. But I would like to assure the committee that, I mean, so this was all finalized towards the end, you know, towards the third quarter of last year. And I want to assure the committee that as we stand, we already have managed to actually admit more than 50 intern medical scientists for this current financial year. So that issue has been resolved. And then there was a question about the training platform and the skew towards larger numbers in Gauteng. And as everybody is aware that, you know, in Gauteng we've got three medical schools, so we've got three academic units. And more than that, the Wits University has got the largest pathology school. And so obviously you find that then there will be more training posts because they will have more staff. And that is why you find that Wits usually has a higher number of trainees, you know, in any other, you know, discipline within pathology. But what we also have done is to, because also we often have a challenge of attracting and keeping senior pathologists, but what we have done to improve the training platform as a whole, whether it be for registrars, that is pathologists, as well as technologists and technicians, we now have got a virtual training platform that is called ECHO, and you have seen this on the, you know, in the report. What the ECHO training platform allows is that we are able to actually reach out to all trainees of every category virtually, which sort of standardizes the training. And we are hoping that this effort is going to also improve even the pass rates that somebody did talk about. Insofar as pass rates are concerned, and we all remember that we really have gone through a very difficult patch, especially in pathology, where the pass rates were unacceptably low, we are not there yet, but we can see improvement, you know, already. In that, as I've mentioned, from the training platform, we've improved how we get access, how each and every registrar or technologist actually gets access to experts, you know, through the virtual training. But also from the college's side, in fact, even the nature of the examinations has changed and has improved. And we're hoping that we're going to begin to see improvement in pass rates. In fact, just looking at February to 2020, February, there's been an improvement in pathology of pass rates from 43% to 52.6% in February 2020. See even more improvement. And I think, yeah, I think the over expenditure has already been tackled, and therefore I think actually that addresses all issues that were raised concerning teaching and training and research. Thank you.
Okay, how many more members, Dr. Chetty?
Just Dr. Curran on the genomic stuff. That's quite technical. Adrian?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I will be very brief. With regard to the sequencing, this is really critical for South Africa in terms of monitoring the epidemic, because it influences our decisions around how we manage and control the epidemic, as well as how effective the vaccines will be from those individuals who have presented twins, and these lineages, the virus, individuals may become reinfected as a result of the changes that are observed, or whether or not the vaccines will remain effective or will need to be altered or changed. So it's really critical that the country commits itself to these particular endeavors to ensure what is in circulation. And it's really important that the community is aware of why we are doing these types of research, because it is of great benefit not only to South Africa, but also other countries and the world in terms of how we manage this pandemic. As far as I'm aware, there have been no exchanges of this genetic material with other countries. There is obviously interest from other countries with regard to their own surveillance as well as antibody responses. But again, I think we are in a good state in the sense that we have necessary control measures to ensure that if there are material transfer agreements, these regulations are adhered to. With regard to the other question around HIV vaccines, yes, it was incredible to see the results of the COVID-19 vaccine efforts. It would be wonderful if we were in the same position with HIV vaccines, but it's a different vaccine, a different pathology, and so I think it is a much more difficult way in which we will achieve a vaccine at the end. But I think there may well be good lessons that we could learn from the COVID vaccine efforts. So unfortunately, you're right. There are with at least two large-scale trials, vaccine trials, that are ongoing, but one had to stop because of lack of efficacy, and so that was really disappointing. There's one more trial that is ongoing, and we hope to see the results later on, but obviously with COVID, that has affected recruitment and therefore will delay the results. There are alternatives to vaccines, and these are called antibody-mediated protection studies. And again, we await some of the results. Some of these have been released, but again, they've been a bit disappointing. So it's been a mixed bag with regard to those results. So there are some good indications that antibody-mediated protection will work, but only under certain circumstances. So I think we have to go back to the drawing board for this particular purpose. I think it's really wonderful that South Africa has contributed and continues to contribute to these major studies, and also that we support surrounding countries with regard to vaccine endpoints. The last comment I want to make was with regard to epidemiologic coverage. Currently, only one province does not have, and it comes back to the Northern Cape, does not have an epidemiologist in place. So we have, at the NICD, a provincial epidemiology program where we have stationed in each province an epidemiologist to provide support to the provinces. However, you're quite right. The numbers that we need are, I think, 1 in 200,000 population in terms of epidemiologists, and we don't meet that target. So the aim is to try and reach at least 200 epidemiologists. And the approach is really to approach it not only at a provincial level, but also, and that is honorable members have raised this point, about district or sub-district support. So the NICD, together with the National Department of Health and the provinces, will be introducing in this year, I understand, a pilot project to see whether or not there's an intermediate field epidemiology training program that will support at district level in order to improve data collection and data for action with regard to, for example, the COVID epidemic, because we know that the best efforts are really at the local level rather than at national level. So this program will be rolled out, I understand, and I hope that that will address some of the workforce requirements. So thank you very much for the opportunity to respond to those questions.
There's just one outstanding question on the injuries on duty, but we didn't quite understand that question here. So with your indulgence, if we could please get it in writing, and then we can respond to it. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, there's another clarity that is sought by Honorable Wilson. I would like you to keep it very short, Honorable Wilson. There's also a message from Honorable Munai as to one question not answered well. I'm not at all whether is this genome one. Can I get those two members only to indicate their areas of clarity seeking?
Thank you very much, Chair, and appreciate it. And thank you to the NHLS. If nothing else, you are certainly always very thorough in what you do. I don't know if I missed it, and I apologize if I do, with regards to the forensic laboratories becoming part of the NHLS. Can you just please re-explain to me exactly which part of the forensic laboratories are becoming part of the NHLS? I got the bit about the negotiations with the bargaining bodies and the unions and the staff. I just need to please understand exactly which part of forensic laboratories will form part of the NHLS. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Munyai. If Honorable Munyai is not able, yes.
Honorable Munyai is having a problem with a connection.
I will request him then to write down the question. It will be then taken in that regard. Any other response on this, Dr. Kemi Chetty or the board members?
So Chair, what the NHLS will be taking over, according to the proclamation, is the forensic chemistry laboratories, which is currently located within the National Department of Health. Now, this had been, as part of the NHLS Act since 2000, and well, this, from the original Act 2003, and it's been promulgated last year. So it comprises four laboratories, one in Pasaki Street, Pretoria, Bloemfontein, Johannesburg, Prince Street in KwaZulu-Natal, and in Woodstock in the Western Cape. And it's a branch that deals with blood alcohol levels, toxicology for the criminal justice system, and with the food chemistry labs. So that's what will be coming across to the NHLS. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah. Honourable members, I think we need to thank the team led by Professor Bruch and all the board members that are here, and the CEO, Dr. Kemi Chetty. Probably we'll consider this wishes very positive. Consider the suggestion by Professor Bruch that we just get to listen to how they manage the COVID-19. I don't think there's any institution that was as big, as busy as them within our country. So it would just be very important before they even bring their annual performance plan and their annual report for this financial year starting that we are currently in, to just listen to that presentation. We'll try and see where we slot that in, and I think it will be a very useful presentation to us that we can assist us. With that, honorable members, do allow me to thank them on your behalf and really ask them to then maybe take leave so that we can deal with other items. We really thank you. If there are any last closing comments, Professor Bruch, we will give you that to do.
No, thank you very much. As I said earlier, it's always very valuable to come to the portfolio committee and to get the questions and the ideas. Just to reassure you that we take detailed notes and we go back and we work through them to see what we can learn and how we can improve from the inputs from the portfolio committee. So thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, honourable member. Thank you, members. We are releasing the team from NHLS.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Go well, Professor Maria. And
yes, Tanya.
Okay, yeah. Honorable members, I'm going to request two things. I'm in a village, and in the next 20 minutes, I might have to continue with this meeting in another arrangement on traveling to the parliament. But nevertheless, let us start. Number two, I would like Dr. Ms. Majalamba to flight the report that we need to bring you up to speed with regards to the next item that we are dealing with, the private members bill that was written by Dr. Tembekwayo. We need to then deal with that item now. There was a presentation that was made by Dr. Tembekwayo to us. We listened to the presentation. We then invited the Department of Health to come in and make their presentation to us. We then deliberated on that matter, and members expressed various views on that matter. We need to now agree to complete this process today, and I would like to then take you through this presentation that is being flighted here, that the report of the committee on this National Health Amendment Bill 2B29-2018, that the portfolio committee, having considered the National Health Amendment Bill, referred to and classified by the joint tagging mechanisms. Report is as follows. One, that this bill, a private member's bill, was tabled and referred to the committee on the 3rd of September 2018. The bill seeks to amend the National Health Act in order to provide that clinics in the public sector must operate and provide health services 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. The committee met with the sponsor of the bill, Dr. Tembekwayo, on the 7th of October last year in order to receive a briefing on the bill. The committee received the input on the bill from the Department of Health the following, the second leg, on the 21st of October 2020. The committee observed and noted the following in relation to the proposed amendment as contained in the bill as presented by the department, that there are financial implications in the proposed bill and that the government budget cycle determines the strategic objectives and the annual performance plan to achieve the goal of the day. That two, the bill in its current form will have massive financial implications for the department and the ministry, and that the quantification of costs must be done before the bill could be considered. Point three, that the department has committed to ensure that all primary health care facilities are operate for 24 hours, and this being achieved through progressive means and when the resources become available. The point four was that the proposed legislation would likely not be the most appropriate vehicle, to ensure the primary care facilities operate for 24 hours, as there were facilities that were operating for 24 hours already. And the fifth point was that there is a need for comprehensive data on the factors informing the operations of 24-hour facilities, such as human and other resources and funding for expanded services. That the committee is of the opinion that there are primary health care facilities that are already operating for 24 hours and they are not legislated for. Furthermore, the committee is currently busy with the processing of the NHI bill, which might also have an impact on the proposed legislation. Of concern to the committee is that the country is currently under financial stress and therefore the department will struggle to adjust the current budget against the health requirements as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. After due deliberation, a motion of disparity on the subject matter of the bill is placed before this committee as required by the National Assembly Rule 286 in brackets 4, Roman figure 1 to vote on. The committee thanks Dr. Tembekwayo for sponsoring the bill and is in so doing giving the committee the opportunity to engage in a continuous debate on the most appropriate health system for the country. I've prepared with the secretary this capturing that, and therefore, according to that rule, the members will then have to express this acceptance, the desirability or non-desirability. Now, we would obviously, all honorable members, not bring back the meeting of the 21st of October, where we engaged again, but would be going straight to express our vote for in favor of the motion of a desirability of the bill or vote in against the motion of desirability of the bill. That is how I have been advised to conduct this session of this meeting. Was two sessions already have taken place, and those two sessions we first had the presentation, and the second part was the presentation by the Department of Health. And it has taken some time for members to reflect and think about it. And here we are bringing this matter then for the closure. And we did agree that it would be in this first term because the matter has already been in the portfolio committee since 2018. We were not here then. They did not find time and space to deal with it. We dealt with it on October 7th and would also like to then bring it to this level. Honourable members, the bill is there. The bill is therefore here for you to indicate yea or nay.
If I may, Chairperson.
Honourable Wilson.
Thank you, Chairperson. And we have obviously given this careful consideration, and a private members' bill that is submitted at any time that will certainly improve the lives of many people is always a good bill. However, having said that, the amendment of the proposed amendment of the bill, the private members bill as submitted, I honestly believe is way too soon. We haven't even got to the stage where we have considered the NHI bill or all the submissions that have been submitted to the portfolio. So I believe, apart from the cost implications that this involves, apart from the situation where there are certainly some attempts to improve the situations at clinics, I do believe that this amendment or this private members bill at this stage is very premature. I think there's way too much to be done still on the NHI bill in its entirety. And while we commend Dr. Tembekwa for the submission at this stage, I do not believe we can support it. I thank you.
Dr. Jacobs.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also express my gratitude to Honorable Dr. Tembekwa for having brought this bill. I would have to agree with Honorable Wilson that at this point in time, it is not desirable. And therefore, I would raise my vote as such. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Van Staden.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now, I am as a Freedom Front Plus, I have a view that this bill is also a bit before time, and therefore I will also vote against this bill. Thank you, Chairperson.
Let me then go to Honorable Kela.
Thank you, Chairperson. let me also join my colleagues, Chairperson. I think for now, we really appreciate the submission of Honorable Dr. Tembekwa, but for now, really, we can't support this amendment of bill. Thank you very much, Chair.
Without any hands, any other hands?
Chair?
Honorable Sokacha.
No, Chair, without giving a lot of reasons, repeating what other members have said, I also think for now the bill will be undesirable. And I would also like to thank Honorable Tembekwa for bringing a private members bill to the portfolio committee. But for now, it's undesirable. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Dr. Tembekwa, or there's also another hand. Honorable Dr. Tembekwa will be followed by Honorable Shengwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to speak right after the decision can be made. Just to give the last word.
Okay. Yes, I was also tempted to say maybe I give you last. Honorable Shengwa.
Yes.
Unmute. Currently muted.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Button. Mute.
Thank you. Thank you to Dr. Tembekwa for her efforts and looking at the country wise and people wise to get this thing. But for now, because we did not dwell much on it, one would not say accept or not accept, because we did not dwell much on it, although it was good, but we can't take a mandate without having that mandate in our parties. Thank you.
Any other member before Dr. Tembekwa? Honorable Munyai is struggling to log in, or is he there? Honorable Dr. Tembekwayo, the last one here now.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just would like to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to present the amendment of that bill as it was presented to the committee. Yes, all the parties for now have said or mentioned their views on the point of undesirability of the bill, but I would say it's very much unfortunate that the committee and the National Department of Health did not see the importance of the proposed amendment of allowing the clinics to open 24 hours, 7 days a week, based only on the cost stroke financial matters, whereas 500 billion was misused based on fraudulent PPE procurement issues that saw some officials being directly involved in the saga. Two, it is also unfortunate also that the committee and the National Department of Health did not see the importance of giving the bill the chance to be tested upon feasibility studies, so have a say on public hearings to decide on the desirability, on undesirability of the bill itself. It's the poor black majority who are suffering long queues where they stand as at sometimes 3 a.m. in the morning only to be turned away because it's 4 o'clock and the staff that is working there is not ready to continue beyond 4 o'clock. But that affects only how much unfortunate because of the decision that is taken by the community. And the bill, as I'm telling you, will come back in one way or the other. To the committee, even though it won't be the same committee because it can come back during the seventh parliament, it can resurface in one way. It can also come back because of the public who would be demanding that they need their clinics to be open 24 hours, but this time not just being open for 24 hours without being legislated. This was a beautiful intellectually compiled piece to convince the committee that is sitting here to say accept this and let's move on, because it was only a line that was added to the section as it is. But all the same, thank you for giving me the opportunity to express my intellectual capability. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, if I may respond.
I don't think I need a response on this matter, because I asked specifically from the chairperson to say, after the desirability or undesirability of this has been done, can I be the last person to talk on this? So I'm not evoking a debate on this matter. I think it's closed. Whether you say what or whether I say what, it won't change the decision.
Yeah.
Thanks, chairperson. Please, yeah. No debate on this.
Honorable members, let us close it at that level. Let the parties that are here represented voted against the bill, and the sponsor, the Honorable Dr. Tembekwayo, also is the one then who was supporting the bill, and leave it at that, because I would get a story and I'm following up to say, remember, some of them were saying maybe not for now. The matter is probably going to be coming back. Someone was saying maybe after the NHI bill, or when it is being also amended. What I can guarantee you, we will not have the NHI becoming a law until and unless there has been some amendments to the National Health Act as it stands. So that part again might then be coming in at that level, because it talks about accessibility of every South African to every facility. So I thank you, members. We'll leave it at that, Dr. Honorable Wilson. We will not discuss it further than that. And we will then record it as such. Are you getting the proper recording, Mr. Machalamba?
Yes, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Honorable members, I have to get to see the transport outside. Let us deal with the last item, the minutes of the 3rd and the 5th of 3rd and the 5th of March. The one was a presentation by the Free State Department, and the second one was the update presentation by the minister. Dr. Jacobs, if your line is clear, can you hold that part as I'm checking my transport here, leaving the Parliament, please?
Thank you, Chair. I will certainly do that safe trip to Parliament for you, Chair. Members, we are at the second last part. It's the adoption of the minutes. The minutes have been forwarded by our secretary, Ms. Machalamba. We have all had an opportunity to peruse the minutes. I am asking that we look at the minutes now, and you can see it being screened. Can we go forward, Ms. Machalamba? Any, as you notice, as you, we go through this, honorable members, please pick up anything you want to raise so that we can go page by page. Anything now so far?
Nothing so far.
Continue. We're on the summary of responses now. Any other business? Consideration and adoption of minutes. We had adopted the previous minutes, and we have any other business and adjournment. Members, any concerns with the minutes? If not, can I please ask for movers for the adoption of the minutes?
Chairperson, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Gela. Any seconder?
Chairperson Mashengwa move the seconder of the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much. So we would accept this minute as constituting realistically what we had discussed in that previous meeting. Honorable Ms. Machalamba, do we have a second set of minutes, if I have seen correctly? Thank you very much. Honorable members, there we have the minutes of the Portfolio Committee on Health meeting of the 5th of March from 9 o'clock to 12:30, and Ms. Machalamba will scroll for us. Make certain that your name appears, and we will go page by page. Thank you very much. You may scroll, Ms. Machalamba. We are on page 4, briefing by Dr. Buthelezi, and the summary of discussions. Summary of responses. Resolutions, and then adjournment. Anything that any member of the Portfolio Committee would like to raise? Any concerns? Any amendments? If not, can I ask for the minutes to be adopted, please, as a true reflection of what we had discussed?
Yeah, I propose that we adopt the minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Kukaccia. Any seconder?
Dr. Jacobs.
Yes.
Just on the, under the last bit, which talks about the resolution, I would just recommend that, I mean, we, you know, Professor Glenda Gray obviously is the chairperson of the MRC, but I think we should perhaps just make it clear that we would like the MRC in its entirety, because we would like to interrogate because for instance, we want to interrogate some of the other vaccine trials and not just from Professor Glenda Gray, because she is working on the J&J trial, for instance, but there are other competing things. So perhaps if we can just broaden that point to say we would like to meet with the MRC broadly.
I tend to agree with you, Honorable Gwakhube. So if we can add that, please, Ms. Majalamba.
Sure.
Represented, yes, Honorable Tukacha.
Sure, I don't know. It's a good point. But it was not discussed in the, we are approving minutes of the last meeting, unless we change them. But in the last meeting, it was said, Professor Gray. But it's a good point anyway. But I don't know how we're going to, thanks.
Can I comment? So what I read, if I may, Honorable Gwakhube, what I do read is that the Medical Research Council should be invited to be part of that meeting. Just that it's captured in brackets. Represented by Professor Glenda Gray. So what the Honourable Member is saying that is the actual Medical Research Council and not only one person of the representing the Medical Research Council. I think it's the same matter. It's just clarifying that it should be more than one person coming to represent. If I understand you, Honourable Gwakhube.
Can I also come in, Chair?
Yes, Honorable Temakwaya.
I was of the view that our secretary presented the minutes to us as it was discussed. And I believe Professor Gray will never come alone. She will bring her entourage to the whole meeting. So we don't have to change and add and chip and chop now. Let us accept the minutes as they are, because you won't come alone. Thank you, and let's move on. We need to be ready to go to Parliament.
There are two views, Honourable Members. Honourable Gwakhube, can we then agree to, there are two points these two members raised that we should keep them as it was captured. Can you concede to that? Honourable Gwakhube?
If I may, Dr. Jacobs, it's Lindy Wolfen.
Yes.
The research, Glenda's Gray's name had come up in the discussions that particular day, and the suggestion was actually that we invite Glenda Gray. But Glenda Gray heads the Medical Research Council, so I think we want the Medical Research Council headed by Glenda Gray. They will never come to a meeting to just discuss one issue. We want them, you know, I think she forms part and parcel of an entity.
All right. I think that it was a suggestion that she's part of an entity. Maybe we should just say Professor Glenda Gray and a team. Put in the words and her team, it would have exactly the same meaning. I don't see it being different from what we had discussed.
Yes. I think so.
Yes?
Yes, I think... Yes, I think Honorable Dr. Tembakwayo, she's correct, and also Honorable Wilson, and also Honorable Sokwacha. Let's leave it like that. It's something that comes from matters arising from the minutes and the proposal that we must also invite the whole team led by Professor Glenda Gray.
True.
I think I agree, Che, on that one. And then I move to second the minutes as it was on my birthday on that day. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. So, Honourable Members, we have accepted the minutes as they were. There was a mover and there was a seconder. I think that brings us to the end of our meeting. Can we have a look at that agenda as far as I understand? I see Honourable Dlomo's hand is up. Honourable Dlomo?
Yeah, no, thank you very much. I really want to thank you for holding on to this process as we are finalizing it. Just to remind the members, and I think Ms. Wachalamba must confirm that next week we are having, I think it's SAPRA and another presentation. But I'm provoked by what we have just adopted now. We need to bring, there's somewhere where we said that in the next meeting, the minister must be accompanied by Professor Glenda Gray. But I think in the light of this, we have just said all entities have not presented. We still need an MRC to come and make a presentation. I'm just checking whether it may be possible that on the same day they do that, they also do the presentation on this one. It may be too big. You may either have to have a longer session than just 2 hours. If we have to listen to their annual performance plan and their annual report together with what Dr. Professor Glenda Gray was doing as a principal investigator. So we will check with them whether that can be lumped in and get a bigger 9 o'clock, maybe to 2 o'clock or what have you. So there's a bigger possibility. We may have to get them to do all those in one day. But I wanted just to bring that and maybe Ms. Matalamba can confirm. I can't recall as to on notices, what are we having next week? I think it's Safra and someone else.
It's only Safra, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable members, I would really be happy because Safra has just been here with us. But if we can just be, I'll write to them. We need them, or maybe we can tell the Secretary, we need them to give us an update on how are they doing in the registration of vaccines. What is their processes of ivermectin? And if there's any other issue, any other member would like to do, because they will also be bringing in their annual performance plan there. Please indicate that to our secretary. Thank you very much. Then, yeah, we can then officially close our meeting if there's no other issue from any member. Okay.
There's the bus, sir.
Hello, Honorable Sokacha.
There's the bus. I hear water there.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much. The meeting is officially closed. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mashengwa. Makela.
Unjani, ma.
Ngiyaphila, I'm missing you.
I miss you too.
Hey, come to KZN.
I will.
Come to KZN.
No, I will.
Arrange to come with N.
No.
Thank you. Okay.